ECER 2009, the podcasts. This interview is with Jane Kenway from Monash University in Australia.
So Jane, welcome to, thank you for, very much for agreeing to be interviewed today. It's fairly chaotic trying to find people at ECER, but I'm delighted we met up. You've come all the way from Australia to talk about a project. You must be mighty interested in it. What's the project about?
The project is funded by the Australian Research Council, and it's about policies that try to encourage researcher mobility, and it's also looking at to how those policies move, but also how intellectuals move around the world and the ways in which theories and ideas move as well.
And just saying mobility for researchers, you're obviously looking to promote it. Why do you think it's so important?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm looking to promote it. I'm more interested in the policies, the reasons behind the policies that try to promote it. What are the logics behind that? What are the arguments for it? What are some of the issues that arise as a function of it? But I'm also, one of the things the project is doing is looking, so it's looking critically at a number of the ideas. Well, for example, a number of nation states are very enthusiastic about, or very concerned about the question of brain drain and how you prevent that, particularly developing nations. On the other hand, a number are also very trying to construct the idea of a diaspora, whereby you encourage your researchers to come home in one way or another, or you try to persuade those that are overseas to benefit their home nation state in some way or another. And others try to look at the relationship between brain drain and brain gain, as they say. So what we've actually done is done comparative studies of those different sorts of policies in different nation states, including Europe, which has a somewhat different approach. But also we've taken a number of mobile intellectuals who are the most senior in their fields in the social sciences and humanities, and we have done what we've called mobility biographies with regard to their own travels and what their travels have meant for their thought.
What's your findings? I know you're not finished the project yet, but what are you finding out?
Well, with regard to the travelling intellectuals, we're finding out that it's very difficult to undertake this study because they're talking about their travels across their lives. So we've got a sort of a longitudinal perspective on their travels, right from when they were graduate students right through to now they're at the top of their fields. But we're also interested in their travels across space. So what does it mean for them, for instance, to travel from Australia to the USA at a certain time, say, for instance, when radical ideas were at their fore, anti-Vietnamese movement, for instance, how did that, in being in that place at that time, influence their subsequent thinking? And equally, how, for instance, when some were in Paris during 1968, what did that mean for the ways in which they thought? And what ideas did they pick up in other places and then bring back to Australia, because our focus, our centre is Australia with regard to the intellectuals, bring back to Australia, and then how did those policies shift, those ideas shift and translate, become indigenised, embedded in the local space, and then how might they also have travelled back to what we think of as the metropole, which is the north of the globe where they often originate.
And I guess then one of the issues I've got is the relation between individual experience and individual research and how that results in a body of knowledge or a collective of knowledge and how that collective grows. Have you looked at that issue at all?
Yes. What we've tried to do is draw on these individual experiences to not just tell individual narratives about these particular individuals, but to identify particular themes and then look at how their work speaks to those themes. The major theorist that we're drawing from and seeking to build upon, rather ambitiously, is Edward Said, because he's done an enormous amount of work a lot of work on travelling theory. But he's also been very interested in geographical location and the ways in which where you come from influences the directions of your the directions that your thought travels in. So when we're looking, for instance, one of the themes we're looking at is the idea of being on the edge of empire. So Australia is on the edge of many empires, actually, and it's also a little empire in itself in the south. And so we are interested we're exploring that theme. So if you're on the edge of empire, do you just import ideas? Or how do you treat them? Do your ideas from the edge, does it give you an edge, being on the edge? And so, rather than telling individual stories, we're seeking to speak to a range of different themes that will have a wider resonance than just the individual stories.
And when we were talking before we did this interview, you were telling me you've got a new project starting in next year.
Well, I'm hoping it will start. I'm hoping it'll be funded, but, I'm quite optimistic. And that's looking at elite schools, drawing on and globalisation. And so it's trying to explore the idea of a transnational capitalist class in relation to national classes and the ways in which elite schools in different locations around the globe are speaking or seeking to... whether they are seeking to speak to the idea of a transnational capitalist class or whether and if, or if they're doing both, looking at the ways in which they will seek to produce a national elite class. So that's the sort of broad parameter, and the methodology we're drawing on is global ethnography. So we're taking a number of schools in 10 different countries around the world, and which includes countries in Asia, South Africa, and so on. And what we're looking particularly at the British model of elite schools and the ways in which that's travelled to different countries and the ways in which that's been embedded in different countries and then shifted and changed over time. So that's the hoped for project next year. So it's drawing on my long-standing interest in questions of globalisation and social change and the implications of that for educational change and also for social relations.
Just one last question. I mean, I'd happily sit and talk all afternoon on this. I'm terrible at doing these interviews because I get really interested in them and then overrun. But I'm really interested, how do you see, it's a big question, how do you see globalisation affecting the future of education?
It's a very fascinating issue and question. And one of the things, rather than answering that question, what I think I'd like to do is to refer you to a book of ours which we put out recently, which is called Globalising the Research Imagination. And what we sought to do in that book was to interview a range of very, some of the most significant globalisation theorists around the world, well, in the English-speaking world, actually, and to ask them what they think are the implications of globalisation for their field. Or if it's an interdisciplinary field for the spaces in which they're working. And what we've been seeking to do is try through that book is to think about what does it mean to develop a global research imagination that is not caught up in the dominant logics of economic globalisation or a globalisation from above perspective. And how might you develop a global imagination that is sort of defiant rather than compliant. And to assist us to do that, we've drawn on the wonderful thinker Castoriadis, whose ideas of the imagination were very, very fruitful for us. So we're looking less at its implications for education per se currently than its implications for the ways in which we think about our research practices and how our research practices don't get caught up in the dominant and dominating logics of globalisation.
Jane, that's a fascinating interview. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it a lot.
This recording was made at the ECER conference in Vienna in September 2009. It is a Pontedusky and VetNet production for ECER. The programme is licensed under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license.